Picture this. You are the diagnostic radiologist reading computerized images of a barium swallow together with a medical student. A barium swallow is a test where a patient drinks radio-opaque barium in order to visualize the esophagus. The information on the radiology request states, 43-year-old woman with mitral stenosis, difficulty swallowing for 3 months. The eager medical student recognizes something out of place. It looks like something is pressing on the middle of the esophagus from the outside in, she says. Pleased with her observation, you give her the hint. That's actually the heart. You press your student to think of which particular structure of the heart is involved in this abnormal finding, and what might be causing this finding in this patient. Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Laurel Toft, bringing cardiology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Describe the pericardial sac and its layers, the pericardial space, and the pericardial fluid. 2. Identify the 3 layers of the heart. 3. Identify the 4 heart chambers, describe their topography, and explain their functions during systole and diastole. 4. Describe the systemic and pulmonary vessels that enter and exit the heart, including their origin and destination, and the oxygenation status of the blood being transported. 5. Explain the basic functional anatomy of the atrioventricular, AV, and semilunar valves, and explain how they operate during systole and diastole to create the 4 heart sounds, S1, S2, S3, and S4. And 6. Describe the role of papillary muscles and chordae tendinae. For our discussion of heart anatomy, let's start outside of the heart and work our way inward. Part 1. The pericardium surrounds the heart. The heart is situated in the middle mediastinum of the thoracic cavity, posterior to the sternum, and medial to, or in between, the lungs. And it is enveloped in a sac called the pericardium. The pericardium is a 2-layer membrane that surrounds the heart and the roots of its outflow tracts, the aorta and pulmonary trunk. The outermost layer is known as the fibrous pericardium. Stiff and unyielding, it protects the heart from overfilling, significantly decreasing the heart's compliance. Beneath this layer is the serous pericardium, which is anatomically divided into 2 layers, the parietal layer and the visceral layer. The parietal layer of the serous pericardium lines the internal surface of the fibrous pericardium. Try saying that 10 times fast. This layer folds inward where the great vessels leave the heart. At this point, it becomes known as the visceral layer, also called the epicardium, epi meaning outside, cardium meaning heart. This reflection or folding forms a space known as the pericardial space. This space contains 20 to 40 milliliters of pericardial fluid, produced by the serous membrane to allow the heart to move with little friction. I like to think of the double-layer serous pericardium like a sheet of plastic wrap folded over on itself with a small amount of liquid trapped between the 2 plastic layers. Pericardial fluid in excess of 40 milliliters is referred to as a pericardial effusion. If too much fluid accumulates too quickly, it can prevent the heart from filling properly, a phenomenon known as cardiac tamponade. Okay, time to check your knowledge. Which layer of pericardium most closely adheres to the heart? The answer is, the visceral layer of the serous pericardium is a layer that most closely adheres to the heart. Part 2, the layers of the heart wall. Deep to the pericardium is the tissue of the heart wall, which has 3 layers. First up is the epicardium. This is the outermost layer of the heart wall. Because histologically it's made up of mesothelium, it's also known as the visceral layer of pericardium. Now, this might seem confusing. The epicardium is both part of the heart wall and part of the heart sac. This is really just an artifact of nomenclature. Because this layer is derived embryologically from the mesothelium, and because it eventually folds on itself to form the double-layered serous pericardium, it can be thought of as part of the pericardium. But because it adheres to the outside of the heart, it's also thought of as the outer part of the heart wall. Now, the great vessel roots exiting the heart, aorta and pulmonary trunk, are not technically heart tissue and thus do not have a true layer of epicardium. However, the adventitia, which is the outermost layer of the great vessels, blends with the visceral pericardium. Okay, second, we have myocardium. This is the thickest and medial layer of the heart wall. Composed of cardiac muscle cells, also called myocytes, it is responsible for the contraction of the heart. And last, we have endocardium. The innermost layer of the heart wall is composed of squamous epithelium, some connective tissue, and a subendocardium, which houses the electrical conduction system of the heart. The epithelium of the endocardium, that's a tongue twister, covers the heart valves. This endocardial endothelial layer is also continuous with the endothelial layer that's lining all the blood vessels and forms the capillaries, which makes sense because the blood flows from inside the heart to inside the blood vessels. Time for another knowledge check. Question: what are the three layers of the heart wall? Answer is the epicardium, myocardium, and endocardium. Part 3, understanding the heart chambers. If we continue our journey to the center of the heart, the only thing deep to the endocardium is the lumen of the heart itself, which is divided into four chambers: the right atrium, the right ventricle, the left atrium, and the left ventricle. Deoxygenated blood coming back from the systemic circulation enters the right atrium via the sinus venarum, and then passes into the right ventricle, which pumps blood through the pulmonary circulation. Freshly oxygenated blood coming from the pulmonary circulation enters the left atrium and then passes into the left ventricle, which pumps the oxygenated blood through the systemic circulation. Although the chambers are separated into right and left sides, the heart isn't exactly sitting square at attention in the middle of the chest. It's actually somewhat rotated so that the right-sided chambers are more towards the anterior of the chest wall and the left-sided chambers are downwards and towards the posterior. So let's discuss the chambers and their positions inside the chest. First, the right side. The right atrium is the most rightward chamber of all the atria and ventricles. Separating the right atrium and the left atrium is the interatrial septum, a layer of heart wall which contains the fossa ovalis, a remnant of the embryologic foramen ovale. The right ventricle is the most anterior structure in the heart and touches the internal surface of the rib cage. The highly muscular interventricular septum separates the right from the left ventricle. Now, onto the left side. The left atrium forms the base and most posterior region of the heart. It sits immediately anterior to the esophagus, which runs between the left atrium and vertebral bodies. The muscular left ventricle extends to the apex of the heart and borders the diaphragm inferiorly. Let's stop here for a quick knowledge check. Question: which chamber of the heart is the most anterior? Answer is, the right ventricle forms the majority of the anterior aspect of the heart. Part 4, the great vessels entering and leaving the heart. The great vessels are called great because they are the largest blood vessels in the body, responsible for delivering blood to the lungs, the heart muscle itself, and the rest of the body. Remember that arteries transport oxygenated blood away from the heart, and veins transport deoxygenated blood back toward the heart after dropping off oxygen all over the body. Deoxygenated blood from the body is returned to the right atrium via the superior vena cava, SVC, and the inferior vena cava, IVC. The SVC returns blood from all tissues above the diaphragm, and the IVC returns blood from all tissues below the diaphragm. Because this blood is returning from the organs, it has less oxygen. This deoxygenated blood enters the right atrium, then passes through the tricuspid valve into the right ventricle, which pumps it into the pulmonary circulation. The main vessel connecting the right ventricle to the pulmonary capillaries is the pulmonary trunk, which divides into the right and left pulmonary arteries. Now, in a sneaky move, although these are arteries, in this case, they contain deoxygenated blood. Remember that arteries always carry blood away from the heart. Usually, that blood is oxygen-rich, with this one notable exception. After the blood is fully reoxygenated in the lungs, it is returned to the left atrium via the pulmonary veins. This highly oxygenated blood then passes to the left ventricle via the mitral valve, where it is ejected into the aorta. The oxygenated blood in the aorta is then transported to all the organs in the body. Okay, knowledge check-in time. Question. What is the name of the great vessel transporting blood from the right ventricle towards the lungs? Answer is the pulmonary trunk, which separates into right and left pulmonary arteries. Part 5, heart valves and sounds. Blood flow is an intricate and well-coordinated process. To prevent blood from moving the wrong way, known as retrograde movement, when the heart contracts, there are 4 unidirectional valves within the heart. The 2 valves between the atria and ventricles are known as atrioventricular or AV valves. These are named the tricuspid valve on the right and the mitral valve on the left. The 2 valves between the ventricles and the outflow tracts are the semilunar valves. These include the pulmonary valve, which is the gateway to the outflow tract of the right ventricle, and the aortic valve, which is in the outflow tract of the left ventricle. These valves open and close to allow the heart to pump blood in the beautiful coordinated dance that is the cardiac cycle. One way to keep track of what's happening with the valves is to listen to the heart sounds. There are 4 types of heart sounds, which are named S1 through S4. The first 2, S1 and S2, are normal. S1. During systole, the ventricles contract, generating pressure and forcing blood out of the heart through the pulmonary and aortic valves. This pressure pushes the AV valves, remember, the mitral and tricuspid, shut, resulting in the first heart sound, or LUB, S1. Technically, this sound is caused by the reverberation of blood within the ventricle and not the closure of the valve itself, but it's shorthand to think of S1 as closure of the mitral and tricuspid valves. S2. During diastole, the ventricles relax. Ventricular pressure becomes lower compared with the pressures in the pulmonary trunk and aorta. As a result, blood flows backward and forces the pulmonary and aortic valves closed, resulting in the second heart sound, S2, or DUB. Like the S1, S2 is also due to reverberation of blood in the chambers. Now, the chordae tendinae are tendons that connect the AV valves to the papillary muscles located in the ventricles. When the ventricles contract, the papillary muscles also contract, generating tension on the chordae tendinae and the AV valves. This tension is normally sufficient to prevent the AV valves from prolapsing backwards, thereby preventing blood from flowing backwards from the ventricle to the atria. Although there are no similar structures for the semilunar valves, the overlap of each valve's 3 leaflets normally prevents prolapse. Knowledge check time. Question. Which valves of the heart close during ventricular systole? Answer is the AV valves, or more specifically the mitral and tricuspid valves, close during ventricular systole. Now for the abnormal heart sounds. S3. Normally, during diastole, ventricular filling is inaudible, but sometimes a third heart sound, or S3, can be heard during rapid early ventricular filling. In a normal child or in an athlete, this sound represents tensing of the chordae tendinae around the AV valve during ventricular filling. However, an S3 heart sound in a normal adult typically indicates an overfilled and overly compliant left ventricle. The abnormal S3 sound is due to the rapid entry of blood from the atria into an already overfilled ventricle, causing vibration of the blood. So S3 is strongly associated with congestive heart failure. The S3 may also be heard in pregnant women because of the added blood volume of pregnancy. S4. Similarly, atrial contraction, also called atrial kick, is typically inaudible. However, if the atria are contracting against a stiff or non-compliant ventricle, a fourth heart sound, S4, can be heard. Blood entering from the atrium hits against a stiff ventricular wall and causes the blood in the ventricles to reverberate. The S4 heart sound can be heard in patients with a thickened ventricular wall as a result of ventricular hypertrophy or due to the presence of scar tissue resulting from a myocardial infarction. It can be tricky to distinguish these sounds when first listening to the heart. One helpful trick is to use the cadences Kentucky and Tennessee. An S1, S2, S3 will cause a cadence like Kentucky, with S3 being the last syllable. An S4, S1, S2 will cause a cadence like Tennessee, with S4 being the first syllable. So when S3 sounds like the key in Kentucky, 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 Kentucky. And an S4 sounds like the 10 in Tennessee, Tennessee, Tennessee. Let's try one more knowledge check. Which pathology is associated with an S3? Answer is, an S3 is associated with the dilation and overfilling of the ventricle that occurs in systolic heart failure. Recap. That's it for Anatomy of the Heart. Hopefully now you can visualize the path of blood through this elegant pump. Let's check your knowledge and see what we've learned today. First, list the three layers of the pericardial sac and identify which layers have space between them. The pericardium is formed by the fibrous pericardium and the parietal and visceral layers of the serous pericardium. The pericardial cavity, which contains lubricating fluid, is between the parietal and visceral layers of serous pericardium. Second, can you identify the three layers of the heart muscular wall? The three layers of the heart wall are the epicardium, myocardium, and endocardium. Next, can you identify the four heart chambers and explain their functions during systole and diastole? The four chambers of the heart are the right atrium, right ventricle, left atrium, and left ventricle. During ventricular systole, the ventricles pump to eject blood into the circulation. During diastole, the atria empty to fill the relaxed and empty ventricles with blood to start the whole cycle over again. Next, describe the physical location of each chamber of the heart relative to the rest of the thorax. The right atrium forms the right heart border. The right ventricle is the most anterior structure in the heart. The left atrium forms the base and posterior region of the heart, and the left ventricle forms the apex of the heart. Next, can you describe the systemic and pulmonary vessels that enter and exit the heart, including the oxygenation status of the blood being transported? The SVC and IVC deliver deoxygenated blood to the right atrium. The pulmonary trunk delivers deoxygenated blood from the right ventricle towards the lungs. The pulmonary veins deliver oxygenated blood from the lungs back into the left atrium. The left ventricle directs fully oxygenated blood into the aorta, which is then transported to the rest of the body. Okay, almost done. Can you name the two normal heart sounds and describe what valve actions produce each sound? The S1 heart sound roughly corresponds to the closing of the AV valves. The S2 heart sound corresponds to the closing of the semilunar valves. Lastly, describe the pathologies that lead to abnormal heart sounds, S3 and S4. The S3 heart sound can be normal, but most often it represents reverberation of blood in an overfilled left ventricle. The S4 heart sound corresponds to the entry of atrial blood pushing against a stiff and non-compliant ventricle. And we're done with this episode on Anatomy of the Heart. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's think back to the patient from the intro. A 43-year-old female with a history of mitral stenosis undergoes a barium swallow for evaluation of difficulty swallowing. It shows an external structure compressing the esophagus. Your medical student knows this external compression is coming from the heart, but where? After some independent study, your student returns the next day ready to report on this finding. She reports that the enlarged left atrium, the most posterior structure of the heart, is extrinsically pressing on the patient's esophagus, leading to difficulty swallowing. You congratulate her on this three-dimensional understanding of anatomy. You then explain that anything which increases left atrial pressure will result in left atrial enlargement. For this patient, the increase in left atrial pressure and resultant left atrial enlargement is due to mitral stenosis, or narrowing of the mitral valve. The heart really is at the center of it all. And that's all for our show. If you like this episode, send us a comment or give us a thumbs up. Until next time.